We are only a week away from opening day. The countdown is on. We're going to continue previewing today. It's everyone's favorite, the catchers. Don't go anywhere. This is Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio, along with Vinny Rotino. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. This is Locked On Brewers, your only daily podcast dedicated to the Brewers all season long. We're a week away, Vinny. We keep reacting to it. Today, we're talking about the catchers. We're talking about the DH position. But there's also some roster news today that was broken in yesterday before the game, that Jose Ureña has signed a minor league deal and then quickly added to the 40-man roster for the Brewers. Instant gut reaction to the former Marlin. Last year, he was with the Tigers. It sounds like he is on the team for bullpen depth. He's not on the active 26-man, 28-man roster, but he went straight to the 40-man. Does that surprise you at all?
It does. I've never seen that happen. He signed as a minor league, on a minor league contract, brought him in as depth, because obviously he had the down year last year with a 5.81 ERA. And then all of a sudden he's on the 40-man roster. I've never seen that before. But what I read was they just wanted to get a closer look at him, wanted to bring him into camp. They must have promised him, like, hey, this is just the opportunity to get a closer look at you, and then we're going to just add you to the 40-man, and you have a really good shot at making the team. He's got to make the team, otherwise he gets taken off the roster just because he is out of options. So we'll see how he looks in camp. I mean, the other gut reaction I had was I like the signing, right? He provides the ability to start and to go long out of the bullpen, and he has a tremendous sinker and a really good changeup as well. He's been really tough on righties in his career. So you heard David Stearns talk about how he has the Brewers are going to try and find a way to get him a little bit more effective against lefties. I bet they do that because they've been really good at being able to tweak guys and get the most out of these guys. So yeah, I like the signing. I definitely do. I'm under no illusion that he's going to all of a sudden turn back into a guy that's going to have like a sub-4 ERA out of the rotation or anything like that. But I do think it's good kind of bulk to get some bulk innings.
For me, I think it's just depth. I personally, maybe there's something we don't know yet that's coming out of this, but I don't see where he fits in to this roster. I mean, in theory, he would be a right-handed Brent Suter role as far as being a swingman, being multiple innings if a starter does go too short. His slider was really good against righties. I think that's what you're thinking of from last year. A 2.13 average for righties against his slider, which was his best pitch last year. He had the most swings and misses on it. He spins it pretty well. He gave up a lot of loud contact over the last few years. I mean, it's depth. We don't need to go too deep into it, but we'll see him here in this final week of spring training.
We will. And the one other thing I'll say is this guy has tremendous character. I actually played with him in 2015 with the Marlins. My second to last year playing was in AAA. Tremendous competitor, tremendous character. So that's no surprise that I'm sure the Brewers did their homework on that, because it seems like that's all they bring in is high character guys, competitors. So that is the other thing. So yeah, I mean, I'm with you a little bit. I just also think, like, you know, they don't add him to the 40-man unless they have some plans for him to break with the team, but maybe try and sneak him through waivers if it doesn't work out, you know, early on.
And it's the other benefit of having the 28-man roster to break camp. You can take a gamble on a guy like Jose Ureña. So the 30-year-old now will get the ball. Last year he was 4-8, about a little more than half the year as a starter, a 5.81 ERA, 26 games, 18 of them were starts. He threw 100 innings last year, but a lot of loud contact, like we said. But let's get to the point of today's episode. We are continuing our positional breakdowns of the team. Last week, we talked about the infield picture. That was including Luis Urias. The week prior, we talked about relievers. And then still during the lockout, we talked about starters. So today, we're talking catchers and DH, which is maybe the lightest episode of this series. And then next week, we'll close things out with the outfielders. But let's start with the first thing that we have to get out of the way. The longest tenured Brewer is gone. Manny Pena, a backup catcher that can hit, is very, very, very rare. And I think the Brewers will miss him. I'm intrigued to see what Pedro Severino does. But can you explain the impact that Manny Pena can give to the, gave to this lineup the last 6 years?
I mean, at the end of the day, yes, Manny Pena impacted the lineup just with the ability to come up and hit some big homers. He actually really took a step forward this last year in terms of, I mean, I'm just looking at the numbers. 13 bombs last year and only 208 plate appearances. That's really, I mean, extrapolate that out. I mean, I don't think anyone's under any illusions that Manny Pena would have hit 45 home runs for the Brewers if he played every day, but I'm just saying that's a lot of homers. My goodness, he hit a lot of big ones too. It impacts the lineup because you don't, it's just a bonus. You don't expect much from a defensive guy. On the offensive side of things, a 732 OPS, that's pretty darn good. And the other thing that he did, and it goes without saying, is how much he impacted the pitching staff. They trusted this guy. He's been there, done that. It's a guy that really didn't get established in the big leagues until he was 29. 2016 with the Brewers is when he really kind of established himself. He only played 33 games that year, and then 107, 98, 76, 15, and 75. I'm just listing how many games he played from 2016 on. And that's kind of the sweet spot is when catchers figure out how to hit. And that's where, you know, I know we're talking about Pena, but that's where Pedro Severino is in that sweet spot as well. So hopefully there is a similarity here to the progression. But long-winded answer, definitely impacted the team on both sides, both offensively and defensively.
As for Severino, it's kind of a good, great timing for him, given he was granted free agency at the end of last season after 3 years with the Orioles. He had a career high in games played. Career high is pretty much across the board as far as counting stats go. He had more plate appearances. He had 18 doubles, 11 homers. He hit 248 as well in that limited playing time. You're bringing in a guy now in free agency to be your backup catcher that's got over 320 games behind the plate in his career and also has a little bit of pop. He's 28 years old. He's from the Dominican. And we've seen a lot of Pedro catching in the first half of camp, given he had to learn all these guys as soon as possible and how hard it had to have been in this shortened camp. But Pedro Severino is going to be the backup catcher for the Brewers this season, replacing Manny Pena. What have been your thoughts from his camp so far?
You know, I looked at some of the video from Pedro Severino from last year, and he's got one of the best catching coaches in Baltimore in the business in Tim Cousins as the bench coach for Brandon Hyde in Baltimore. But he's got a better one here in Milwaukee named Charlie Green. Mm-hmm. And Charlie has quite the track record with developing catchers. And I know I talked to Charlie on this, and Walker McKibben and Nestor Cordor have taken Pedro Severino under their wings, and obviously I think Charlie Green, he's so humble. He also has had a hand in it. You got to believe that. And I think he looks pretty good. I think the hands look a little bit improved. What they told me that they did was they just simplified things for him. I think catching has kind of gotten a little bit complicated with the multiple setups and stuff like this, and they just simplified things for him, and he's been able to really implement some of the things. He was 57th in framing last year. 57th out of like 60 catchers that I looked at on Baseball Savant, and it was bad. He struggled with the glove. So I think you'll see an improvement there, and I think that's probably why the Brewers did go ahead and sign him, because again, it's the guy that they think that they can get a little bit more out of, and I think that they will. I like this signing, and I can see not big things from Pedro Severino, but I can see him impacting and bringing value to this club.
Well, it's funny you mentioned framing, because if you clicked around enough on Savant, you saw who was leading that framing leaderboard last season for all of Major League Baseball. Catcher framing runs saved is a very advanced metric. It's tough because it's all tracking in the shadow of the strike zone. It's kind of subjective as far as, you know, umpires and strike zones and things like that. But Omar Narvaez was number one in catching framing runs saved. 10 catching framing runs saved ahead of the Rangers' Jonah Heim, the A's' Sean Murphy, and the Rangers' Jose Trevino. And I don't know if many folks know about Jose Trevino. This dude in the minor leagues, who I've seen personally, is one of the best framers I have ever seen. And the fact that he's fourth and Omar is ahead of him, if Pedro can learn from Omar, it's an art, and it's a beautiful thing no matter how much longer it lasts until we get the automated strike zone. It's a beautiful thing to steal a few strikes with the best pitching staff in baseball.
It is, and I agree with you on the framing stat. It's a little bit weird and subjective. Totally agree. But guess who was the leader in 2020 as well? Omar Narvaez. Want to know where Omar Narvaez was on that leaderboard in 2019 when he was with the Seattle Mariners? And this is a testament again to Charlie Green and the staff that's helping these catchers out. I can't even find him. I'm scrolling. He's not anywhere close, just to let you know. So Omar Narvaez made a huge leap, and again, it's a testament to the coaching staff and the development, Charlie Green and the likes. It is definitely a valuable thing to have a pitcher be 1-1 and all of a sudden a strike is stolen that should be called a ball, and now all of a sudden it's 1-2. I actually hate the idea of an automatic strike zone because we're not going to see that much anymore. I think It is definitely an art, definitely part of the game. So, yeah, we're hoping that Pedro Severino can follow in the Omar Narvaez type of mold, that type of progression.
And to your point, 2019, he was 57th out of qualified catchers of 64. And that was with Seattle. Then 2 years later, he's at the top of the leaderboard. That's pretty impressive, and that's the track record for the Brewers coaching staff. Let's talk a little bit about Omar, though, at the plate. Remember, he got off to that epic start last season. Definitely calmed the waters as far as, all right, this is your everyday catcher. Let's see what he can do. And man, he got off to a torrid start, and the hamstring kind of hurt him at the worst possible time. He earned an all-star nod. But for the first, into June, his first 42 games, he was hitting .315. I mean, this dude just kept on hitting. He was hitting .300 in the month of June as a catcher. And that's so rare to find. Sure, you want, maybe some folks would nitpick and say, oh, I need a little more power. He's getting on base. What more do you need from your catcher?
And Dom, I would argue that he kind of kept the team afloat early on when they were really having a hard time scoring runs. He really came up with some big hits. He was really one of the only guys that was consistently hitting for, gap power and an occasional home run. And like you said, getting on base with those really quality at bats. I would argue he kept the team afloat until that Willy Adames, transitioned the team into becoming a little bit more of an offensive power. But my goodness, he was phenomenal. With his at-bats. The thing that stood out to me last year for Omar Narvaez, and I got to be honest, I wasn't a believer that he was going to be able to get there, was that staff leadership mentality, that staff leader that they desperately needed from him. He looked like a different dude. Like, he looked like a guy that was taking charge. He looked like a guy that the pitchers were super comfortable throwing to. He looked like a guy that the pitchers were really leaning on for guidance through a game with those fingers that he's putting down. So that was the biggest step and the biggest jump for me that he took last year. I think he ran out of gas just a hair late. And like you said, the hamstring probably, hamstrung him. But anyway, it was a phenomenal year from Omar. We're definitely needing that and looking forward to that again from him this year.
I mean, he's always been a hitter. He's a career .266 hitter with a .750 career OPS. And coming off of a really rough go of it in 2020, it was really great to see him rebound the way he did. 11 homers and 20 doubles as well for him. 20 doubles was a career high. And to your point about starting the season until Willy Adames arrived, he was leading the team in hitting. The day that Willy Adames arrived, he was hitting .369, also had a .979 OPS. He was one of only three players with an OPS over 900 on the Brewers at the time. So he certainly did keep things afloat. And I love that you talk about the leadership qualities, because when you are suddenly, behind the plate for what became the best pitching staff in baseball and learning how to receive Corbin Burns' cutter, knowing how to stick Brandon Woodruff's high-spin fastball, understanding how to frame a Freddy Peralta slider and things like that. Yet there's all these little things add up to help things out. And I remember a quote from Corbin Burns saying that when Omar is able to talk to an umpire and know what my stuff does and say, hey, stick with me here, this ball is going to cut harder than you think it will. And that just shows the leadership of saying, hey, a catcher knows he's got to steal a few more strikes, but the umpire has got to be aware of, this ball is going to move a lot more than you think. Stay with me here. It's going to come backdoor. And we saw so many strikeouts last year from Burns on that backdoor cutter.
And those are the little nuances that a catcher, a really good catcher, a seasoned catcher, brings to the table. And that matters more than you think. I mean, the game is a game of inches. That's totally a cliche. But a win and a loss could be determined by one strike or by one block ball or by one, you know, shake off, and then the pitcher has to step off, and then all of a sudden the hitter gets a little bit more comfortable. And, you know, the pitcher's out of his rhythm. Like, that stuff matters, and that stuff goes unnoticed by most people. And that disrupts the rhythm of the game between the pitcher and catcher. And again, that could mean a win or a loss. And Omar, again, I think he really took that step forward. I played with this guy. My last year playing was in 2016, AAA for the Chicago White Sox, for the Charlotte Knights. And Omar was on that team. And I got to tell you, I didn't expect him to develop into this type of a staff leader. I think he was a guy that was, you know, worried about getting his hits and throwing runners out. And he's got a new identity. He is that staff leader, and he's never not going to be that now, because I think he's really established himself, and you can sense that this guy really takes a, you know, a lot of pride in that part of his game and a part of the game. So tremendous job by him.
As far as catchers that had at least 400 plate appearances last season, he was sixth in all of baseball and fourth in the National League in WAR amongst catchers, only trailing some really good names: Buster Posey, Will Smith, not that Will Smith, JT Realmuto, Salvador Perez, and Sean Murphy. I mean, those are five all-stars right there, and Omar is among them as an all-star too.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's going to get paid at the end of the day, right? Next year, after he's a free agent, he's going to get paid a lot of money because of what you just said. Hard to find guys that can hit and handle a staff, and he can do both.
Yeah, so that's the catcher half of things. Really excited to see what Omar can do. They avoided arbitration. They settled for $5 million, a twofold raise for him last year. He was due $2.5 million in 21. He'll make $5 million in 2022. Before we start talking about what the designated hitter could look like, let's tell you about our friends at BetOnline. Of course, college basketball has determined its top teams here for the Final Four and the national champion this weekend. And BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. From all the latest odds, contests, and player props, you name it, they've got a ton of preseason baseball stuff up there right now, because as we all know, when the college basketball season ends, it's baseball season, baby. So BetOnline has all of these preseason player props on there too. They got over-under for win totals, things like that. Not just basketball or baseball too. They've got live betting and casino games on there as well. You can head to their website or use your mobile device, and you can learn more about the trends and get in on the action at BetOnline, where the game starts. I feel like we've been talking about the potential designated hitter for really the entire lockout, and then now to this point, we're a week away from it being real. The Brewers are going to play in Chicago, NL versus NL, and both teams will have a designated hitter. And it's going to be a moment of history. Here we go. Now, who's going to be the first starting designated hitter for the Brewers, or who's going to be the majority designated hitter this season for Milwaukee? What say you? Who jumps out at you first? Who's going to get the majority of at-bats at DH?
Majority, not opening day?
Let's start with majority, and then who gets opening day, assuming it's against Kyle Hendricks.
Okay. Majority DH is going to be Andrew McCutchen. And the reason why is because they want to keep him healthy. They want to keep the bat in the lineup. They want to keep him healthy, keep him fresh. He could certainly play. I think you could argue that he would probably play a better corner than Hunter Renfro. Could be argued. I think Hunter Renfro looks pretty good out there actually this spring. But to keep him healthy, I think Kutch.
How about you? We can talk about that. Hunter Renfro today was written by Jake Rill that, you know, Hunter Renfro could be an emergency fill-in at first base too, which he did briefly with the Rays. But for me, I think the majority, and it's so tough because I flip-flopped on this even before asking the question, between McCutchen and Hira, because we can't ignore the spring that Hira has had, but he does have another option. He can go down and make sure he rakes, as I think the Brewers would rather have Keston continuing to get ABs in AAA, making sure he's ready. And if he forces his way up, he forces his way up, because he's not the type of guy that's going to do well with sitting for 4 or 5 games at a time. So that's why I say McCutcheon, but I think Hira's a lot closer than we're giving him credit for.
He's a close second for me. That's the other guy I was going to say. I think there's just a little bit, I guess risk is the wrong word, but like if you're a betting man and making this prediction, that's where the risk enters. I mean, Kutch is the safe bet to get the majority of these DH spots. If they didn't sign Kutch, I think Hira is your opening day DH, and he's going to get the majority of them. Especially because I do believe that this is a real change from him. And I'm not saying anything about the swing. I'm just saying about his demeanor and the way he's kind of approaching his at-bats this spring. He looks like a different dude. I think this is going to carry over into the season. But like you said, he probably needs to play every day. It's going to be very, very interesting what happens with Kesson here going forward once the season starts.
And just for sake, assuming it's going to be Kyle Hendricks, I haven't seen anything announced. It's really between Hendricks and Marcus Stroman, you would figure, right, for the Cubs, but I imagine it would go to Hendricks. Just for the sake of comparison, if you were just picking opening day, Kesson Hira in his career against Kyle Hendricks is 3-17, whereas Andrew McCutcheon is 6-30. Neither one of them have gone yard off of McCutcheon. So, I mean, hey, it's the blink your eyes and all of a sudden you're 0-4 against Kyle Hendricks. Not many guys hit him well, but that's just something that they will be looking at as well.
Yeah, I'm curious who would be an option, perhaps the DH from the left-handed side of the box. They don't have that option. I mean, Rowdy Tellez is going to play first base. The other guy we could talk about is if Tyrone Taylor continues to tear the cover off the ball in spring. I mean, he's going to get some DH opportunities, although he is probably a little bit more. My guess is if Tyrone Taylor's playing, he'll play left. Kane will play center, and Christian Yelich will, you know, probably DH at that point. So
I was going to get ready to say that your left-handed DH is Christian Yelich.
That's a good call. Yeah. No, I do agree with that. So, I mean, you know, this team is deep. This team has got a lot of deep options that are not just like platoon type guys or guys that, you know, got to be the perfect matchup to play. Like, got a bunch of guys that can step in, they can play. Jace Peterson could probably be a left-handed DH.
I like that point where you say Jace Peterson's another left-handed bat. If he's hot, throw him in there at the DH. And the DH is another opportunity for Craig Counsell to give guys the half day off. You hear about American League managers being able to do that for a long time. Well, now it's coming to the NL and you get that half day off. Keep guys off their feet for at least half the game not playing defense. It could go a long way in a long season, especially condensed the way it is with doubleheaders and things like that. I'm intrigued to see how Craig Counsell uses his DH position for the rest of 2022. We got one more quick little segment coming up talking about MLB Network's top 100 right now countdown. Got a few more Brewers that made the list in the last couple episodes. It's been going on all week long. Before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. So we talked about the fact that Willy Adames made it into the first 20 as well as Christian Yelich in the first episode of this the other night. Willy Adames was number 81. Christian Yelich was number 100, and we learned that Devin Williams is not included in the top 100, even though last year's Rookie of the Year, Jonathan India, is in the top 100, but I rest my case on that. It should be Devin Williams in the top 100. The last 2 days, we saw Freddie Peralta slot in at number 75, which, awesome. He's getting his roses. He's getting his credit due. To say that Freddie Peralta is your third option, and he's a top 100 player in baseball, another great example of the spoils that we have in Milwaukee.
Without a doubt. I mean, I just saw him pitch yesterday against the Padres and it was good. And he looks exactly the same. He looks like he's really trying to refine that changeup. And like you said, this is a pretty impressive starting pitching group that, you know, Freddie Peralta is at number 75, top 100, and he's slotted to be your number 3. So, and let's make no bones about it. He's going to be sliding or rising well above that. I think he's probably down that far on the list because he did get hurt and he missed a few starts and his innings totals were a little bit lower than, you know, some other guys on this list. So he's as good as anybody in the big leagues. He is. He just is. He's as good as any starting pitcher in the big leagues. You look at the numbers, it was like 12 and a half strikeouts per nine. The walks were a little higher, but no one squared him up. The OPS against was minuscule. He was absolutely dominant for the entire season. So they're more than pretty spoiled. They're very, very spoiled. They have a chance to win every single night, you know, especially those top three guys, but also those bottom three guys. They have a chance to win every single night.
All right, now I got a bone to pick, okay? So we move into the top 60. Josh Hader is listed at number 60. Liam Hendricks is listed at number 59. I know that's producers, just giving them a chance to talk about two closers at the same time on TV. How is Josh Hader listed as the number one closer when you do your top 10 per position on MLB Network, but yet behind Liam Hendricks? I just don't get it. I love Liam Hendricks. He's a great dude. He's a great player. But Josh Hader has a better, more successful save rate, has allowed fewer runs, and quite frankly, it doesn't make any sense. If one's going to be ahead of one in one countdown, he can't be ahead of the other in the next countdown. It just doesn't make sense.
It does not make sense. And I think he's a little bit low on this list anyway. Yeah. I know that relievers kind of they don't get their due, but my goodness, is he good. And I'm assuming there's no other relievers then on this entire list after 59.
Yeah, there can't be.
So I get it. They only, you know, they're limited in how they impact the game in terms of the volume of innings that they throw, but he is pretty special. They're both special, but Hader is definitely, first of all, yeah, agree. Hader should be ahead of him. I think they both should probably be up that list a little bit more even.
They should certainly be side by side, but I think just flip the order. And I believe they're both top 50 players in baseball right now because there's something about those last three outs, man. There's something about it. To have somebody you can rely on is worth way more than one win for those three outs.
How about the consistency too with Josh Hader in terms of the, I mean, 34 out of 35 saves he converted last year. And the one save that he didn't convert, it was just, I forget who, Peraza just closed his eyes and hit a homer against them. I mean, that's literally what he did. And that's what, you know, why he blew that one save. I mean, there was no other saves in question that he was going to blow. I mean, he's getting better, which is scary. So, he needs to be a top 50.
I agree. All right. But the whole point of this countdown is it's all made up. The points don't matter. And just to get guys like you and me to talk about it gives us content.
I love it. I could talk about anything with in terms of the Brewers. I love it. I love these conversations. I love to pick some bones as well. That's a good catch by you. And maybe we should tweet something out at those MLB Network guys.
All right. Well, nonetheless, we've got a lot more to get to in this final week until opening day. It's shocking. We've got tomorrow you've got the episode, and then next week we've got more season preview stuff coming, including an NL Central roundtable that you participated in. Can you give us a quick preview of that?
So I didn't participate in that yet.
That'll
coming
be Sunday.
This Sunday.
Yep. Got it. But it'll be posted on Tuesday. So I appreciate you stepping in for me because I got to work. I'm actually working that night. So perfect. I'll be back with the Brewers telecast on Sunday and Tuesday. So I'm hyped to be with Brian Anderson and company on that one as well. It's the countdown is on. We're a week away. Holy cow.
We're a week away. We're a week away to the start of the Brewers trek towards the World Series and a 100-win season.
You're tripling down now.
I've quadrupled and quintupled down. I don't even know how many times I've said this now.
See if you can go get that at Potawatomi then, maybe. I don't know. but he's Vinny. I'm Dom. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. Thanks for making us your first listen, and we'll see you tomorrow. Keep on swinging.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.